Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Subsistence has to come first. Protection of wildlife has to come first. If there's not wildlife, if there's not fish, you're not going to have subsistence.
Alaskans weigh in on a controversial proposal to reform federal subsistence rules. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 6th. Good evening. I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, a state endorsement of a proposed charter school in Fairbanks draws some local pushback.
The board stands by our initial decision and the reasons that are laid out in the letter that we sent.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
The man arrested for a high-profile murder in Homer pleaded guilty Thursday more than 6 years after Anisha Murnane went missing. The case shook the Kachemak Bay town and prompted community-wide canvassing that garnered national attention before a tip to the Kenai Peninsula Crime Stoppers led to Kirby Calderwood's capture in Utah. KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports.
Duffy, as she was known, was reported missing in October of 2019 after she failed to arrive at a doctor's appointment. For years, missing persons flyers were a common fixture around Homer. They showed pictures of the preschool teacher on the beach, smiling with children, and asked, "Who took Duffy?" This week, Homer residents finally got a solid answer to that question. The 36-year-old Calderwood pleaded guilty Thursday to second-degree murder in Murnane's death. It's part of a plea agreement through which the state will drop 8 other charges, which included first-degree murder, kidnapping, tampering with evidence, manslaughter, and sexual assault. On Thursday, Calderwood sat handcuffed in court, wearing a yellow prison jumpsuit. Superior Court Judge Kelly Lawson walked him through the terms of the deal.
All right, Mr. Calderwood, then to count 2 of the indictment, which is CTN 2, to murder in the second degree under 1141-110A1, what is your plea?
Guilty, Your Honor.
Under the plea deal, Calderwood has agreed to an 87-year sentence and will be eligible for parole after serving 2/3 of that. The deal also includes 10 years of probation after his release. Charging documents say Murnane and Calderwood knew each other through a supportive living facility where Murnane lived and Calderwood had worked. According to the charges, Calderwood's arrest came after a tip from his then-wife to Kenai Peninsula Crime Stoppers. The information Calderwood's wife provided was corroborated by DNA evidence, according to court documents filed with the plea deal. Murnane's remains were never found. Here's Mike Moberly, Calderwood's attorney, reading the plea stipulations.
Forensic examination of the crawl space of the residence revealed evidence, including blood and DNA, matching Murnane. As a part of the factual basis for the plea agreements, Calderwood specifically admits that he stipulates that intending to cause serious physical injury or with knowledge that his conduct was substantially certain to cause death or serious physical injury to Murnane, he caused Murnane's death.
Calderwood was living in Ogden, Utah at the time of his arrest, and the FBI also searched his home there, finding Murnane's watch and a missing persons poster, according to prosecutors. In a statement provided to KDLL, Murnane's uncle, Michael Heelsman, said the long delays in the case represent a failure of the justice system. Heelsman wrote, quote, "Delay justice is denied justice, and it also wastes taxpayer money. For 40 to 50 years, Alaska has spent petroleum revenues on systems that have not delivered timely investigations or accountability. We need a criminal justice system that investigates these crimes more quickly, thoroughly, and professionally, so that more offenders are held accountable without years of delay," end quote. Lengthy pretrial delays in Alaska courts have come under scrutiny in recent years. The 2025 analysis by the Anchorage Daily News and ProPublica found the average time to resolve serious felonies was around 3 years, a threefold increase from the decade before. Heelsman also thanks supporters and friends in Homer and around the world for helping search for Murnane, for keeping the case alive, pressing for her killer to be found, and attending court hearings. Murnane's memory, and the memory of all missing and murdered people, is honored with the Loved and Lost Memorial Bench at the Homer Public Library, which was commissioned by Murnane's parents. The bench was dedicated in 2022 and was the location of a 2023 lamplighting ceremony in Murnane's honor. Murnane's mother, Sarah Connor Murnane Berg, died in 2024 from cancer. In her obituary, which Murnane Berg wrote herself while receiving hospice care in Wisconsin, she wrote, quote, "Cancer or heart disease will be on my death certificate, but we all know that the real cause was the loss of my dear Duffy," end quote. Calderwood's sentencing is set for July 1st in Homer. Reporting from the Kenai Courthouse, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
It was only supposed to last for 4 hours, but Tuesday's hearing on a controversial proposal to reform the Federal Subsistence Board went for 6 hours and 33 minutes. Every person who signed up to testify, both online and at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife headquarters in Anchorage, got a chance to speak. Even though more than 100 people weighed in, it's far from the last word in this debate. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, most were from rural communities that depend on hunting and fishing to put food on the table.
The battle over who manages subsistence on federal lands is an old one in Alaska that basically pits two groups against each other, those who subsist to survive and those who hunt and fish for sport and recreation. Safari Club International is one of the nation's largest wildlife advocacy groups, which promotes conservation and the freedom to hunt and fish. It has proposed some major changes to how subsistence would be managed on federal lands in Alaska.
To say that the proposed changes are anti-subsistence is simply not correct.
John Sturgeon, a longtime leader of Safari Club's Alaska chapter, says the Federal Subsistence Board has drifted far beyond its original intent, has ignored the rule of law, and failed to make protecting fish and wildlife its highest priority.
Specifically, the protection of wildlife must always come first. I've heard people say today, subsistence has to come first. Protection of wildlife has to come first. If there's not wildlife, if there's not fish, you're not going to have subsistence.
The Safari Club wants to remove 6 public and tribal seats from the board, change how the Rural Advisory Council members are selected, and wants the board to defer to the state of Alaska when they disagree on management decisions. The Federal Subsistence Board was created after the state failed to comply with the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, legislation Congress passed in 1980 that mandated a rural priority for subsistence. It originally included only the heads of 5 federal agencies.
We strongly believe that the people who use the land need to be making the decisions about the land.
Gloria Burns is president of the Ketchikan Indian Community, one of many tribal leaders who came from across the state to protest the proposed changes.
What we have noticed throughout the years as we've watched, as we had the addition of the 3 public seats and then the 3 tribal seats, there was a strengthening of the scope and the ability.
With only 60 days allotted for public comment, the February 13th deadline is fast approaching. Tribal leaders say this time frame is too short to weigh in on something so critical to the rural and native way of life. Kara Moriarty, the Interior Department's senior advisor for Alaska Affairs, reminded the crowd that this review was prompted not by the Safari Club, but by President Trump, who ordered an evaluation of all government departments.
The scoping period is just solely to gather information at this point. No decisions have been made whether to make any changes to the program at all.
Moriarty says after the scoping period closes, there's no requirement for the secretaries to take any action at all. There is one thing both sides agree upon, the 3-minute limit on public testimony.
It's an insult.
Joe Williams is the tribal president for Saxman. He urged Moriarty and other Interior Department leaders to visit villages and hear firsthand from those who would be hurt by these proposals. As he handed Moriarty and her staff jars of smoked salmon, he said an entire way of life is at stake.
So as you're having this, remember, this is the way of life. I've never met you and hope to come to know you, but this is what we do.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Throughout the hearing, Moriarty apologized profusely for the time limit, but said there was no other way to include as many voices as possible. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, mushers hit the trail for this year's Yukon Quest.
No one runs the Yukon Quest for a nice trail. Like, that's never been a thing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
The president of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District's board is standing behind the board's unanimous vote to reject a charter school application last year. That's despite the state education commissioner last week overturning the board's decision and a 28-page letter that approved the application. The committee backing the Pearl Creek Steam Charter School had appealed to the commissioner in November following the local denial. KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist has more.
The Fairbanks School Board voted to reject the application in October, turning down the committee seeking to open a charter school at the recently closed Pearl Creek Elementary. The board later issued a 52-page written decision that outlined their reasoning, and board president Bobby Burgess says that position remains unchanged.
The board stands by our initial decision and the reasons that are laid out in the letter that we sent when we initially rejected the application.
The document includes concerns about a net $2.8 million impact to the district's overall budget to open the school. It also takes issue with the Charter School Committee's plans for a facility, admissions, transportation, and student nutrition, among other things. The board's decision says it seems likely that, quote, the proposed school could fail entirely, end quote. Burgess says greenlighting the application would have meant taking on too much risk.
When there are uncertainties in the plan, things still being worked out, and we put our stamp of approval on it, we are taking responsibility for the operation of that school.
Governor Mike Dunleavy and his education commissioner, Dina Bishop, have consistently said they'd like to expand charter schools in an effort to give students and parents more choices. The commissioner's recent approval of the Pearl Creek application overrides the local board and now sends it on to the State Board of Education for final approval or denial. The commissioner's letter says the proposed school's committee met or exceeded its legal obligations when applying and that there wasn't anything to justify upholding the denial. On multiple occasions, the commissioner's decision refutes the board's findings by saying the board expected too much detail at the application step. And the letter says there's nothing in Alaska law requiring a charter school applicant to demonstrate, quote, likelihood for success, which the board had pointed to as one of its reasons for denial. Jennifer Redmond is treasurer for the Academic Policy Committee backing Pearl Creek Steam Charter School. She says it felt good to see their application take the next step.
At the end of the day, it's, you know, really about our kids who deserve an engaging hands-on learning and families who want to stay invested in public education. So it was really wonderful to see that shown through and that it really affirmed that the Pearl Creek scene meets the legal and educational standards to move forward.
The committee wants to open the school this fall, and Redmond says they are still ready to do that. She says 340 students have shown intent to enroll at the school and that people have put in thousands of volunteer hours so far.
I think this is, you know, just reflects a lived experience and local values and really a deep investment in our children and community.
Funding for a new charter school does not appear in the proposed fiscal year 2027 budget recently released by district administration. Superintendent Luke Meinert told the board that's because they don't want to set aside money for a charter that doesn't yet have the final go-ahead. But he says it's among the things the school board should be keeping in mind. In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
The 11th Airborne Division will begin a major training exercise Monday near Fairbanks around Fort Wainwright and Owsen Air Force Base. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Joint Pacific Multinational Readiness Center, or JPMRC, will be conducted through February 26th, mainly around the Yukon training area east of Eielson. 11th Airborne officials say this year's exercise won't involve much activity on other training areas around Fort Greely. That's what Lieutenant Colonel Alyssa Clark, Fort Greely's garrison commander, told the Delta Junction City Council in Tuesday's meeting.
We'll have a very small footprint, potentially of some Marines, as well as some 11th Airborne individuals.
An 11th Airborne spokesperson said Friday that the division has transported military vehicles up the Parks Highway from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson to Fort Wainwright. Many of those vehicles were brought on Alaska Railroad flat cars. Division officials expect more vehicles to be coming up the highway through the weekend. An 11th Airborne news release says the exercise is intended to test the readiness of 11th Airborne soldiers to deploy quickly and conduct large-scale combat operations in cold weather alongside other U.S. and allied military units. The spokesperson said about 10,000 service members are participating in the exercise, including some who are working in support roles. Multinational partners and allies participating in JPMRC include service members from Canada, Sweden, Norway, and Italy. Some will be participating and some will be observing, the spokesperson said. This year's exercise also will include greater use of drone aircraft, according to an 11th Airborne informational video, which is AI-generated.
Testing will focus on evaluating system performance in sub-freezing temperatures, preserving battery life, and ensuring visibility in low or no light conditions.
The video said the exercise is part of an initiative to adapt drone technology for warfare in Arctic and other extreme climates. It said the 11th Airborne has established new drone manufacturing and training programs at Fort Wainwright and J-Bear. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
It's been 3 weeks since one of the schools in Aniak was abruptly closed due to structural concerns in the gymnasium. Now, the Cuspuck School District says it is prepared for the worst. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
On Wednesday, the district hosted a meeting at the Aniak Community Hall, which it says is the designated evacuation point if the gym roof at its 6th to 12th grade school suddenly collapses. The district says more than 10 tons of building materials recently arrived in Aniak and that a construction crew is currently working on scaffolding to shore up and protect the gym roof. The gym was closed in early January after people reported that it was actively cracking open and that the majority of the wooden supporting joists had snapped, according to Superintendent Madeline Aguillard. In mid-January, Aguillard says a structural engineer recommended that the gym be demolished and said it was unsafe to occupy the junior and senior high school altogether. The roughly 50 displaced students are currently taking classes alongside younger peers in the attached elementary school. Over the past weeks, the district says staff have been doing evacuation drills so students can practice reaching the community hall and are accounted for in the case of an emergency. Aguillard told community members at Wednesday's meeting that she is confident the district can maintain classes for Aniak's roughly 100 total students, even if its newly built elementary school is also deemed unsafe to occupy. She says that the district office has ample space and that the local Native Corporation has offered up use of an old elementary school as well. The district said its final action plan will depend on what a team of engineers and the district's insurer find next week during their visit to Aniak. Aguillard says it has been a tough situation. The schools are more than just buildings, and this closure has come at the heart of basketball season and left a lot of academic and community events up in the air. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Anchorage seniors will soon be able to ride the city's People Mover bus for free 2 days a week. On Tuesday night, the Anchorage Assembly voted to make bus rides free for people ages 60 and over on Fridays. Seniors can already ride for free on Wednesdays and receive a 50% discount on rides all other days. Assemblymember Aaron Baldwin Day was one of the sponsors of the proposal and says she hopes the extra free day could save the city money in the long run by discouraging seniors from using the city's pricier Anchor Ride service. Officials say that service for disabled and senior residents costs the city about $27 per ride. And Baldwin Day noted that the cost of the city's contract with Anchor Rides is going up.
I think it's important for us to figure out creative ways to serve our population, particularly our elders, and to do so in a fiscally responsible way. And if we can reduce the number of rides that are taken via Anchor Rides because folks are riding the People Mover bus, then that is a net win, in my opinion.
The move to make Fridays free for seniors comes after assembly members added $100,000 to the city's public transportation budget in November. The city then solicited public comments through its public transit advisory board, and the board ultimately voted to recommend Friday be a fare free day for seniors. The ordinance passed by a 10-2 vote, with members Scott Myers and Keith McCormick opposed. The ordinance takes effect 30 days after it passed, meaning the first new free bus day for seniors in Anchorage will be Friday, March 6th. Musher Jason Mackey will hit the trail first when the 2026 Yukon Quest Alaska 750 gets underway tomorrow. Mackey made the random pick at the Meet the Mushers event last night in Fairbanks. It's where competitors and fans chatted over food, drinks, and a poster signing assembly line. Mushers then determined the race order by drawing their bib numbers in front of the crowd. Mackey was also first up last year, and he says he considers it a good spot to be.
Well, because it's not the back of the pack number, even though there's only six teams. I mean, I don't mind going out number one. I just don't.
Eight teams signed up by the deadline for the Quest's premier race this year, but that's since fallen to six. Here's musher Keaton Lobrick's theory about the size of the field.
Everybody else is afraid to run this race. All the other mushers are scared.
Reigning Quest champion Jeff Dieter says he thinks Lobrick is onto something. Dieter says the Quest is known for suffering, but he says it's also about enjoying the seclusion, having a good time with dogs, and visiting hospitable communities along the way.
No one runs the Yukon Quest for a nice trail. Like, that's never been a thing, and it's not going to be a thing. But we're running the Yukon Quest because it's the Yukon Quest.
The guaranteed purse this year is $35,000, according to race officials, who've also said the 750 trail will actually cover over 800 miles. The race begins tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. behind the Morris Thompson Cultural and Visitor Center in downtown Fairbanks. Movie theaters across Alaska have faced a wave of closures over the last few decades, from Anchorage to Ketchikan. But in Homer, one independent startup is defying that trend. As KBBI's Simon Lopez reports, the Porcupine Theater in Homer is marking its first anniversary with more than 800 monthly members and a surprising shift in what residents are seeing on the silver screen.
Homer's movie theater first opened in 1956 and screened films delivered by steamship from Seward. After decades of family ownership, a group of local residents purchased the venue in 2024 and launched The Porcupine. This latest chapter replaces the traditional blockbuster or bust business model with a membership-based subscription. The new strategy prioritizes classics and second-run films alongside live events to keep the projectors running in a shifting media landscape. Co-owner Susanna Webster says a membership-driven model provides a safety net that avoids a total reliance on individual ticket sales.
Really, without those members, we couldn't do all the other things that we do, because we do so much. But it really is that stable monthly income that makes everything possible.
Several movie theaters in Anchorage closed down. It's a national trend. Industry press points to competition from streaming services and lackluster box office sales that struggled to rebound after pandemic lows. The owners of The Porcupine recognize the pressure from streaming services. Webster says new releases are on those services at the same time they are shown for the first time on the big screen.
Whereas 20 years ago, a movie could come out and then wasn't going to get released to Blu-ray or DVD or before that VHS for an entire year potentially. So people had to see movies in the theater if they wanted to see it anytime soon, and now that just does not exist.
The Porcupine's first year largely followed their original plan to operate as a community-supported, member-funded venue. The theater focuses on second-run and older titles because they don't come with the same screening requirements new releases have. Though that doesn't mean the theater can't screen new movies. Co-owner Nate Spence-Corman says studios have been more flexible than anticipated.
I think we're planning on it being 90% second run or kind of classics, and then having the occasional movie. But they've been, some of the studios are really flexible, and we're able to get stuff. If not the first day, we've had a couple of, actually on the first day that they've been released. Often it's within a couple weeks or a few weeks.
In total, the theater screened 72 new releases during its first 11 months. Webster says the membership model also allows for a wider range of programming, including documentaries and older films, without relying on every screening to sell out. The theater is also experimenting with live sports broadcasts, starting with Super Bowl Sunday. It hosted its first fully staged live play, part of the owner's goal to operate as a multi-use space. Webster says the space has also hosted school activities and events for local nonprofit groups. Webster says more than 800 people now pay a monthly membership, providing a stable base of support for the theater. For the month of February, the theater is repeating its opening month promotion, offering $5 screenings to the general public. In Homer, I'm Simon Lopez.
Juneau's Crimson Bears high school football team is slated to be featured in the most watched sporting event in the United States this weekend, the Super Bowl. In September, a team of five reporters and cameramen from a national TV network visited the team and filmed a game against Anchorage's Diamond High School at Adair Kennedy Memorial Park. This week, NBC Sports released a short film featuring Juneau's team and others across the U.S. as lead-up to Super Bowl Sunday, when millions of people will watch the Seattle Seahawks and New England Patriots go head-to-head during the National Football League's 60th championship game in Santa Clara, California. The film examines the impact of football across the U.S. and features longtime NFL sports reporter Peter King. Here's King talking about Juneau Douglas High School Yadaat Kathle senior wide receiver Noah Ault in the film.
The dedication of some players goes further. Noah Ault plays receiver and safety. He punts. He returns punts and kickoffs. And the aspiring athletic trainer even tapes ankles before the game.
The film can be watched on NBC's YouTube page. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Patrick Gilchrist in Fairbanks, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Evan Erickson in Bethel, Simon Lopez in Homer, and Clarice Larson in Juneau. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde. Kirsten Dobroth is our producer, and we'll be rooting for the Patriots. And I'm Wesley Early, who will be rooting for the Seahawks. Have a great weekend.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.